He's one of the most charismatic screen actors that I have ever seen. His powerful presence has appeared in some of the best Australian films ever made, from his first film as a teenager in Walkabout in 1971 to the last film I saw him in, last year's rebooted Storm Boy, aged in his 60s. A proud Yolngu man, David Gulpilil now lives in Murray Bridge here in South Australia. He's the subject of a new book by journalist, surfing journalist and author Derek Riley, whose most recent book, Wednesdays with Bob, was about former Prime Minister Bob Hawke. Derek, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Deb.
When did you first see Gulpilil?
First time I saw Gulpilil, I must have been 10 years old. So I was in the late 70s. And it was a television showing of Walkabout. And I remember just being so thrilled and amazed and impressed by this really cool young kid who could spear his own animals and save the two clueless white kids lost in the desert.
That's exactly the impression that I had of him the first time I saw him as well. And I fell in love with him then, and I've never fallen out of love with him. What made you want to write a book about the life of Gulpilil?
Well, I'd written a book on who I regarded as the best politician in the country, Bob Hawke, and I wanted to do the best actor, and it had to be David. And the great thing about David was I admired him so much as a kid. He'd always sort of played a part of my cultural life through cinema, and I knew that he was eventually that he was really ill, and it was a chance, like Bob, to really lasso their legacy and to show Australians just how important they are.
Once you've made the decision, was he hard to track down?
Yeah, he was particularly hard to track down, and no one knew where he was. We had the publishing department, everyone sort of looking for him and everyone pulling in their contacts. And then it just happened that I was down the beach at Bondi going for a swim, and I saw the actor Dan Wiley, and he asked me what I was doing. I said I was chasing Gulpilil, and he said, you better hurry, he's got lung cancer. And it turned out that Dan had been in Charlie's Country, the Rolf De Heer film.
I sure do.
Yeah, great film.
Amazing film, yeah.
Yeah, and so he got Rolf De Heer to call me. Rolf sort of asked what I was doing, what I wanted to do. He spoke to David and David's carer, Mary Hood, and she said, come on down, meet him. And, no one's ever written a book about him. So he was pretty excited by the prospect.
I'm glad to hear that. Did you get many stories directly from Gulpilil, or did you have to find fragments of his life through his friends?
It was mostly finding fragments of his life, through his friends, through Paul Hogan, Jack Thompson, Gary Sweet, Damon Gemma, Rolf De Heer. Rolf was sort of in the background, but Philip Noyce, Philippe Mora, who famously made Mad Dog Morgan with Gulpilil and Dennis Hopper. And David, he suffered from lung cancer. English is his sixth language. He was on painkillers, so he wasn't the most expansive interview subject. But the beauty of David is just being in his orbit, and I loved observing him. And the dialogue between him and his carer Mary is just priceless. He'll be silent, then he'll just light up. And I'll have this amazing back and forth. And when I was there, I'd always turn on my voice recorder. Obviously, they knew I was doing that. And so I could record, faithfully their dialogue. And it was amazing. These two people, they couldn't be any more different. She's a, 70-year-old former aged care nurse, and he's a 66-year-old Yolngu man who didn't see a white person until he was 8 years old.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And I like the way you describe the fact that Gulpilil listens completely to what you're saying and then doesn't actually consider what's been said or give a reply until having thought carefully about it.
Yeah, it's a very confronting thing for an Anglo-Australian like me. And when I went down there, I was just filling all the gaps in the air with my words. And then Mary pulled me aside. She goes, you should read this book. And it was called Why Warriors Lay Down and Die by Richard Trudgeon. And it was a book about Yolngu culture and Yolngu mores. And, one of the first things it says is when you talk to a Yolngu person, they'll sit there and listen. And it might be 5 minutes before they respond. And so next time I went down there, I'd ask him a question. And I'd just sit there. You just sit and sit and sit. And something would come out. It's impolite also for a younger person it's impolite to ask a direct question. So you ask an indirect question, you get an indirect question answer back. So it's a very different interview experience.
Yeah, what a refreshing change, actually, from the immediacy and the urgency with which we live modern life. I think it would have been quite liberating.
Yeah, you and me were just back and forth, bang, bang, bang. But with him, we'd be sitting in the front room of this little townhouse in Murray Bridge with the heater on. I'd ask him a question, and you can't look at each other either too much. I mean, you can, you know, look at each other, but not stare at each other. So you're sort of sitting there side by side, just throw out a question. It's just silent for a while. And then you're just talking, you start talking about his dad hunting when he was a kid or something, or the messages he got from his grandfather at Corroboree. Pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, remarkable. My special guest is Derek Riley. He has just released a new book called Gulpalil about the life of this remarkable artist. And as you touched on, Derek, he was a hunter, tracker, dancer, storyteller, all through traditional upbringing before he saw a white man when he was a young boy. But the name David actually came from the missionaries.
Yeah, so when he went to the mission, they asked what his name was, and he said Gulpalil. And the first mission, they said, oh, we'll call you Joe. And he goes, okay. And then he went to the next mission, and they said, what's your name? He said, Gulpalil. I said, oh, we'll call you David. So his first mission name was actually Joe. But David was the one that eventually stuck.
Just a complete lack of respect for the name with which he was born.
And also the birthdays as well. All the mission Aboriginals got the birthday July 1, the first day of the financial year. And it's funny because people talk about David being a classic. I think it's a Cancer, July 1, but him being a classic Cancerian when the birthday was just given to him by the mission.
Yeah. As we have touched on, with Nicholas Rogue coming into his life with Walkabout in the late 60s, early 70s, he really found himself displaced from his traditional culture from then, really, from his teenage years.
And it's funny with Nicholas Rogue too, because when I started doing the book, I discovered that he was still alive. He was in his 90s, and I was desperately trying to contact him. But he was actually on his deathbed in August 2018, whatever it was. So that was one person I didn't get, which would have been incredible, because he found David on as a dancing boy at the Maningrida Mission in, I think, 1969.
That's right.
So,
and
yeah.
Did you speak to his son? Because his son, of course, starred in the film Walkabout with David Gulpalil.
Yeah, I couldn't get Luke, and I tried so hard to get Jenny Agata, who plays the girl who David, you know, kills himself over after he does the ill-fated, you know, mating dance, you know, that famous scene that haunted every child who saw it. And but I couldn't get them. It was really fun. I'm not sure why, but, I would get close and then they would just disappear again.
What a shame.
That's the nature of journalism.
That is indeed. And, you know, my view is, having read the book, I can't help thinking that you could write several tomes on the life of Gulpalil and barely scratch the surface of the stories. In terms of alcohol, which is something with which he struggled throughout his life, was that something he was introduced to really straight away when he entered the filmmaking world?
Yeah, that came on, you know, pretty much day one, because he worked with John Millian, a famous Australian actor and, you know, lover of booze. And he taught David how to act while drunk. And David thought that, you know, this is the white world. This is what you do. You get boozed, you act. And it was the 70s as well. So it was a very sex, drugs and booze and rock and roll kind of period anyway. So David thought, this is the white world. This is how you behave. And so under the tutelage of John Millian, he was introduced to alcohol, or something that, you know, stayed with him for a very long time.
Yeah, which is a shame, really. But Gulpalil never was really able to fully reconcile the two cultures that he had to straddle for his whole life, really. What were the issues at play there, Derek?
There were cultural issues. For example, he would do a tribal dance and it'd be in a movie and he'd be in trouble culturally back home. In Stormboy, there's this eagle dance, famous dance, beautiful dance, but it was a tribal dance and he wasn't supposed to, you know, show the world the dance. And so he was always scared that, you know, something terrible would happen if he went back to Ramagini and that there's all these, and he married a woman of the wrong skin and all these things. So there was from my interviews, there seemed to be a very strained relationship with his, community back in Northern Territory.
And despite being in some of the most popular Australian films ever made, and I'm thinking here of Crocodile Dundee back in the 80s, and of course The Tracker, Rabbit Proof Fence, so many others, including the wonderful Charlie's Country that you named, he never amassed any wealth, did he? Because part of that was sharing with community.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the great saver, that's for sure. You know, that's just the thing in younger culture. You give it what you've got, you share. You know, if you get a kangaroo, you bring it home and you share it with everybody. And David was and is viewed as a cash cow to his community and, you know, to a lot of people surrounding him. And, you know, even now when I was down there visiting him, you be shooting the cover, for example, and the phone would ring and you just hear da-da-da-da-da, account number, da-da-da-da-da, bank, you know, how much money did you want, sort of stuff. So even now, he's still constantly hassled for money, and Mary's carer tells me that when they were in Darwin, it was just non-stop. They'd be at the traffic lights and he'd have a six-pack of beer in the car and hands would be reaching and trying to get his beer and all these stories. And I think, you know, living down at Murray Bridge, it's a place where he has some really good friends and some really beautiful people surrounding him. And he feels very content, from what I can tell.
I'm very happy to hear that. I love the chapter in your book about his friends Michael Hickenbottom and Terry Hocking.
The Queers on the Hill, they're amazing.
They are, and what a 65th birthday party they gave him.
And I love it when it got cold and Terry, who's actually David's best friend, burnt all the furniture and David's going, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And you go, "David, what would you do around the bush in your cold?" And David goes, "I'd burn a car." And so it was classic. They have these beautiful, they couldn't be any more different, these two men, but they really do have a lovely connection.
Gulpilil's health isn't good at present, as we've touched upon. Does he think much of his own mortality and beyond that, how he would like to be remembered?
Interviewing David, I would ask questions like that and I wouldn't get a lot back. But from what I can tell, his behaviour, what he's told other people, is that, you know, like any man facing the end, or I mean man or woman facing the end, it's very scary. And one of the reasons he does like being near Adelaide is the access to good doctors and the Royal Adelaide Hospital. So he does think about his mortality. He wants his body taken to the homeland, to Gulpilil, and he wants Terry to be there. And so he does think about it. He does think about it a lot, and I think he finds it quite confronting and very scary, as you would.
Yeah, well, that's right. Our own mortality is very confronting for all of us, that's for sure. Congratulations on the book, Gulpilil, Derek. Thank you very much for talking with us about, in my view, one of the most amazing artists Australia has ever produced. I hope it goes really well for you.
Yeah, thanks, David. That was great.
Thank you, Derek. Journalist, surfing journalist, author Derek Riley. His new book is called Gulpilil. And if you're listening, Gulpilil, we love your work.